Welcome to episode 90 of the Star Trek Academy, a podcast about the latest new Star Trek. Today, our topic is the first three episodes of the current run of Star Trek Prodigy. It's officially referred to as the second half of season one, even though it's been months since the previous episode, but that's what they call it. I'm Academy Media Professor Michael Merrick.
And I'm the Academy Philosophy Professor Rodney Cupp. Follow us on Twitter at Trek_Academy, or to listen on the web or subscribe your app to the podcast, go to anchor.fm/Star Trek Academy.
And we want to remind our listeners that for the current run of Prodigy episodes, we're looking at this season in batches, not episode by episode. So this time it's episodes 11, 12, and 13. Of what they're calling the Prodigy first season.
And why are they doing that? No one knows, but our first order of business is a brief summary of these three episodes. And if you haven't seen them, beware, there are spoilers here. And Dr. Michael Merrick is here with that summary.
Okay, so the episode titles are Asylum, Let Sleeping Borg Lie, and All the World's a Stage. In the first, Protostar finally reaches a Starfleet communication station that is very distant from the rest of the Federation. The Protostar crew has been performing good deeds, which they hope will ingratiate them to Starfleet. But it all goes wrong when we discover that the weapon the Diviner said would destroy Starfleet is still active within Protostar, and it messes up all of the outpost systems leading to its destruction. Our Prodigy crew members escape by the skin of their teeth. The Protostar crew locates the weapon, and it's called the Living Construct. And they determine that they can't deactivate it, and removing it from the ship might just allow someone else to find it and use it. They happen to encounter a Borg cube ship with all of the Borg dormant. They come up with a scheme to Borg the cube and see if the Borg have any way to disable the weapon. Zero, who has been part of the Medusan hive mind in the past, connects with the Borg Vinculum, which is the Borg ship's central processor. We learned about that back in Voyager. Things happen. Borg wake up, and they're really scary, of course. Everybody but Gwyn is captured and made ready for assimilation. But they do get away without learning anything to help disable the weapon. In another adventure, the Protostar crew encounters a local pre-warp culture that seems like it's cosplaying Star Trek original series, but they've lost a lot of the details over the generations. For example, they think it's Starflight, not Starfleet. They're called the Endoparizons because an original series Enterprise shuttle, the Galileo, crashed on the planet and has been polluting the environment, leaking warp plasma onto dilithium crystals. And the locals just don't remember the pronunciation very well, which is why they say Endoparizons. Ensign Garovik was on the shuttle, and they nursed him back to health. He taught them about Starfleet before he eventually died. The Protostar folks solved the problem with help from the locals and realized you don't have to be Starfleet to embrace Starfleet values and ethics. Meanwhile, the real Admiral Janeway on the USS Dauntless has reached Tars Lamora and finds the Diviner still alive, but in some sort of stasis. They manage to wake him up, but he has big memory problems, memory loss. He only remembers little bits. He does recognize an image of Chakotay, who he remembers was taken prisoner, and also mentions his daughter being taken away from him, making Janeway think that the Protostar is in the hands of bad guys. And that's kind of a brief look at the first three episodes of this run of Prodigy.
All right. Well, before we talk about the philosophy, the themes, and the morals to these stories, here are some of our other thoughts about this episode. Now, we're going to jump around among these three episodes because we're considering them all together.
Yeah. And I want to start with the Borg episode, the one in the middle. It's a really creepy episode, and it always is when we've got crew people on a Borg ship. This episode premiered the week after Halloween in the United States. I think it could easily have been conceived of as a Halloween episode because sure. It's kind of scary. In particular, Gwyn bucking up her nerve and walking out among the Borg drones and wondering if they would notice her. That was a really scary sequence.
Yeah, especially when one of the drones shot a glance her way. That was very creepy. It makes me wonder if this might have been a little too scary for some kids.
I'd be interested to know what the rules of engagement are for the Prodigy writers when it comes to things like that, scary yeah. plot elements or things that are appropriate or not for the age group that's the target demographic. In All the World's a Stage, the name Ender Prizons is E-N-D-E-R-P-R-I-Z-I-A-N-S. It's an example of the people on the planet not perfectly remembering what Garavik taught them. By the way, Hologram Janeway says no Starfleet ship has been in that area for 100 years, but Garavik as an ensign in the original series would probably be more like 120 years. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have the question of when the Galileo crashed, why wasn't it recovered and Garavik found? Yeah, there were problems with transporters and things, but you wouldn't think that Kirk and Spock and all those folks would just walk away when one of their shuttles crashed. So
yeah,
we'll probably question. Never know the rest of that story, but it would be interesting to know. We also know more now about the way in which the Diviner expects to destroy Starfleet from within.
That's right. So we are learning things here. Now, apparently this living construct, when the Protostar makes contact with another Starfleet ship or outpost or what have you, this thing will download something like a virus, though maybe not technically a virus, that will cause the ship or outpost or what have you to self-destruct. And probably any subspace radio contact would carry the weapon. So once these logs are forwarded to Starfleet, they could propagate this destruction signal all over the Federation, right?
Yeah, it may not technically be a virus, but it works like one, where as soon as a contact is made, whatever the signal is transmitted. And then when that station makes a contact, it's transmitted again elsewhere. So it goes to one place and then 12 places, and each of those go 12 places. And the Protostar people decide that they can't go to Starfleet now, and maybe not even contact Starfleet by subspace radio, again, because of that damage it might cause. And they don't exactly know, but they're being extra cautious about it. They will continue to do good things to help others, but they've concluded they have to stay away from Starfleet to protect Starfleet, they believe, mm-hmm. until they can figure out how to disable the weapon.
Yeah, they've come a long way since the beginning of the series, haven't they, Michael? When Dal back then was focused only on his own self-interest, and here he is looking out for the whole of Starfleet.
Yeah, they told us at the beginning of the series that there was going to be a process of growth, and so in a way it's not surprising. But yeah, they started with a bunch of individuals who hadn't even been able to communicate with each other to begin with, and then we've seen them getting closer and closer and closer as a crew, or you might even say as a family. So we have lots of answers that we're looking for that come out of these three episodes we're talking about today. Yeah, I think the assumption is that this weapon came with the Diviner from the future, but we don't know that for sure. Is it possible that Starfleet created it and Chakotay took it to the Delta Quadrant? If not, how did the Diviner get it on Protostar? Did he have Protostar once and lose it just in that cavern over there where the kids found it? We know that Gwyn had all of the training manuals for Protostar, so it's not clear if the Diviner had the ship for a while and then lost it. And where is Chakotay these days? What was mm-hmm. his mission all about? Will Admiral Janeway's ship explode when she finally catches up with the Protostar?
And where is Barnes Frex, right? His escape pod was empty, but there was a warp signature nearby that they're going to track. And what on earth is happening to Murph?
Here's a wild speculation. Is Murph really Chakotay? And Chakotay will come out of Murph's chrysalis? Or will it just be a butterfly? A giant humanoid butterfly? Who knows? The Borg, when we encounter them, are asleep due to a neurolytic pathogen, which is almost certainly a reference to the Voyager season finale, which you remember, and Admiral Janeway from an alternate future comes back to Voyager to help the ship get home sooner. And part of her plan is to inject a neurolytic pathogen into the Borg collective to destroy the entire network of Borg transwarp conduits that let them get all over the galaxy in short order. Now, that would have happened about 6 years before this Prodigy episode. Mm. And in fact, it did result in Voyager getting home, if you haven't seen the Voyager finale. So is this cube ship suffering from future Janeway's pathogen? We've never really had clarity about what's up with the Borg after the Voyager finale. I had always assumed that all of the Borg transwarp conduits were destroyed, and so all of the Borg ships were pretty well isolated, sometimes years and years of travel time away from the others. Now, in Picard, Jurati found some Borg and said that other Borg were still out there that were not part of her group, but we still don't really know anything for sure. By the way, it is possible that the Borg ship in this episode is also the Borg artifact that we saw in Picard. Now, it was pretty clear that that ship's submatrix collapsed when they assimilated Romda and learned about the admonition, but the dating aligns, and that assimilation of Romda and the Borg ship collapsing happens pretty much in the same year as season one of Prodigy. So maybe we can postulate that Zero somehow weakened the submatrix on the Borg ship and made them more vulnerable when they finally came across Romda sometime in the weeks or months ahead. The writers have also planted the seed about Dahl's species. It's not identified in the database, but there's a note that requires anyone encountering one of his species to contact Starfleet immediately. Now, this might be a good thing, but it might not. And so, again, we can be certain that the stories will come back to this in the future. Episode 13 about the people on the Ender Parisian planet who learn about Starfleet drew a lot on the Star Trek original series.
Yeah, and we find out what happened to Ensign David Garavik. Now, he showed up in the original series episode Obsession. That was the episode in which Kirk was hunting down this monster, this blood-sucking monster.
Fans call it the vampire cloud. We can call it the vampire cloud because it was a cloud that went after people's red blood cells.
Perfect. Yummy red blood cells. Now, they're on this planet, Kirk and Garavik, and Garavik hesitates. He's got a clear shot at the vampire cloud, and he hesitates. And he is blaming himself. Later on, Kirk says, look, your phaser actually wouldn't have done anything to this thing.
Right. So we have met Garavik before, and it's interesting to know what happened to him. The shuttle Galileo, of course, is also the original series design. It had the insignia NCC-17017 on it. We remember that from the episode, the Galileo 7. Now, that particular shuttle in the Galileo 7, I think, was lost. It burned up in the atmosphere after the crew was beamed out at the last second. Mm-hmm. But they maybe reused the numbering system. Again, that is a clear reference, a clear drawing on the original series. And I have to say, Rodney, that this episode was also reminiscent of another original series episode, not a very good one, I have to say, the Omega Glory.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In which Kirk has to read the preamble to the U.S. Constitution for the battling Yang and Kam tribes on this planet to set them straight. In their case, it was this idea they had of parallel planet development, not just a forgotten encounter from the past. But it was still a case of remembering the past poorly, which is the basis of this episode in the Omega Glory. They remembered it poorly and didn't do very well with those memories. This Prodigy episode, they remembered poorly, but they still made the best of it. They did a pretty good job.
Yeah, Dal says they forgot some things, but they remembered other things.
And but we have several other very, you know, quick take notes here that we want to talk about.
There's something I noticed in Asylum, this first episode. Zero asks at one point why Barnes Frex, the guy on that station, keeps saying the final frontier, right? That has to be a reference to Star Trek V, right?
Well, in the opening credits of more than one Star Trek series, Space, the Final Frontier, these are the voyages. They have made a point of calling attention to the redheaded Trill officer on Janeway's ship. I suspect she's going to have some significant role in future episodes, more than just providing information to Janeway. You know, a lot of series, detective series, this is common. You have characters whose main role is to find something off screen and come tell the cast about it, to inject information into the storyline. So I suspect that she will be more than that. When Zero plugs into the Borg Vinculum, I was reminded of Seven of Nine connecting to the Borg cube in Picard season one. But also, I have to admit, R2-D2 connecting to the Death Star computer systems. At one point, Gwyn's morphing arm weapon becomes a Klingon Batleth, and she says, let's see how they adapt to this. That's reminiscent to Worf, I think it was in the movie First Contact, telling the Borg, assimilate this, as he wields his Batleth. The real Janeway is pretty upset about this stolen starship, saying that it's now a manhunt, not just a rescue mission. I can't help but expect that once she finds out what the deal is, what the full story is, she'll go pretty easy on the kids. On the other hand, that might not be before the end of the season or even before the end of the series.
Or, and this is something I'm a little worried about, you know, if the Dauntless encounters the Protostar, and I think it's a matter of not if, but when, the Dauntless will be toast, right?
Yeah.
And Janeway's crew may end up on the Protostar with those darn kids.
And then who's in charge? Is Admiral Janeway in charge, or is Captain Dahl in charge and Janeway's just a guest?
I don't know.
No. Now, there have been TV series in the past in which the heroes are on the run and whoever is pursuing them is like a regular or a recurring character. All the way back in the 1960s, The Fugitive was maybe the first example of this on TV. We had the guy who was wrongly convicted of murdering his wife, that escaped, was on the run, and the, I think it was FBI, at least Inspector Erskine, was trying to track him down, and every few episodes would show up to try to track him down. But the idea, maybe because it was successful then, has been used many times. It really feels familiar. Mm-hmm. The pursuing law officer is almost an archetype in TV. Except that in this case, we know Janeway pretty well, so she's more than just a cardboard antagonist for the heroes. I thought it was interesting that when we first meet the Borg ship, all of the drones are asleep. And yeah, we talked about that pathogen earlier. And the Protostar crew escapes when Zero puts them all back to sleep. And that's how Data defeated the Borg the first time they attempted to assimilate Earth in the Best of Both Worlds. He put them to sleep. When that Best of Both Worlds Part 2 came out, the cliffhanger resolution, when it first aired, I talked to someone who said, well, you know, putting the enemies to sleep is a standard tactic in Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, really? I'll have to remember that if I ever play.
The Enterprisians know how to operate an original series vintage starship because of their oral traditions, and they actually build sets for their dramas. It's kind of similar to how Gwyn learned to operate the Protostar. She didn't have the ship, but she learned through studying manuals. And I thought the voice performances in this episode were interesting. I don't usually spend a lot of time looking at the closing credits, but I did this time. Union rules, I believe, allow a voice performer in a particular episode to actually do more than one role. If you listen to the original animated series, it was easy to say, well, that's James Doohan playing that extra part,
or
Nichelle Nichols playing that extra part. Well, in this episode, Boons, Garovic, Sprock, and other Enterprisians were voiced by Fred Tatasciore, who plays Shax on Lower Decks.
I thought that voice sounded familiar.
Eller Pernell, who plays Gwyn, also voiced some of the other Enterpriseans. D. Bradley Baker is the regular voice of Murph, you know, for the noises Murph makes. And this episode was also James T. and other Enterpriseans. And a voice actor named Eric Bauda, I think it's pronounced, voices Scotty, Sulu, and various other Enterpriseans.
Well, you know, since you brought this up, I have to complain for a minute here. The person who assumed the identity of Kirk didn't really sound like Kirk. He sounded like an impression of Kirk, like what the comedian Kevin Pollak used to do. Do you remember that, Michael?
Yeah.
You can find videos of this on YouTube, and that rubbed me the wrong way.
Yes, it was jerky, the way William Shatner is sometimes parodied.
It but, seemed disrespectful or something.
I have never really felt that was Shatner's voice style. I mean, maybe once or twice in a particular situation, but that was not his typical delivery.
No.
But it was an in-joke to the long-term fans. Mm-hmm. I can tell that. Finally, that for this part of the podcast,
okay.
Did you notice that in All the World's a Stage, Dahl is experiencing imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
The perception that, you know, I'm in this job, but I'm not doing a very good job. You know, I'm an imposter. I'm only pretending to be good at the job. He started out the series so sure of himself. But the setbacks related to the weapon particularly have him questioning himself.
You know, at one point he compares himself to the Enterpriseans, right? He says, or somebody says, these people are living a lie and they don't know it. And then Dahl says, just like us, right? Of course, as it turns out, they're a lot more Starfleet than he thought. They helped save the day. But
yeah, it's not the superficial things that make you Starfleet, like uniforms or set pieces in a theatrical presentation, but what's down inside, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about meanings then. So what messages did the writers and producers want us to take away from these episodes? And I think we've got a lot to talk about here, right?
Yeah, Rodney, the entire series has been about moving past one's individual interests and forming community, forming a family, and embracing the values of Starfleet, learning about the values and embracing them. The prodigies, that is to say, the regular cast of the series, they have been doing that, particularly in their decision to be doing good deeds to, I said in the summary, to ingratiate them to Starfleet when they eventually meet up. But they've been blending into a pretty solid team in the process.
Yeah, they have. They have. And, you know, if we just focus on some individual episodes here, I like how in this first episode we're looking at, episode 11, they're jumping off this crumbling station is, I think, symbolic of Janeway's advice to Dal. Janeway tells him to show them who you truly are, right? She's talking about Starfleet representatives when they arrive at CR 721 and take a leap of faith, she says. Well, that's what they do. When they jump off the station, they take a leap of faith in Rock, for one, and Rock takes a leap of faith in herself.
Yeah, it's both something they actually do and a metaphor, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the message here seems to be to believe in yourself and also others of goodwill, I think, and that definitely includes Starfleet. And as Gwyn tells Zero in this next episode, she says, when you show others who you truly are, you risk getting hurt, but it's nothing to be ashamed of if it's motivated by love for others. So there's this theme of believing in yourself and being yourself.
And I think this connects with what we talked about in Lower Decks, where there was an ongoing theme about family, that family is what you're born into, yes, but family is also the people you gather around you, your closest people. And in Star Trek, the ensemble cast in the various series usually do develop a feeling of family. But remember that Prodigy is designed in part as an introduction to Star Trek for young people who are not already fans. And so maybe this is, for these young people, this is part of their introduction to this idea of family and caring for others that they will hopefully then encounter in other series they choose to watch.
Yeah, and you're talking, you mentioned Lower Decks. It just kind of reminded me, we've had this multi-season character development arc for Mariner, right? Mm-hmm. I think she's finally reached a point where she is going to start being herself and really integrate herself into this family of Lower Deckers and her mother as well.
And it would be interesting to know if there was any coordination between Lower Decks and Prodigy. I mean, the productions are relatively independent, but they're still part of the overall structure going up to Alex Kurtzman. So it wouldn't surprise me if, at the conceptual level at least, they talk about things they want to address across multiple series. I don't know. That's just a guess, but it would be interesting to know. Or it may just be that you have different groups of writers and showrunners that know Star Trek and know it well, and they know what the themes should be. In episode 12, the Borg episode, Zero says he overcomes assimilation by the Borg collective because he was already part of a stronger collective. And his implication was the Prodigy crewmates were his stronger collective.
Yeah, there's like it's like the Borg collective and the Protostar crew are being compared here. You know, at the end of the episode, there's this analogy drawn between Starfleet and the Borg. Janeway says that Dahl is learning and adapting like the Borg. And Dahl replies, well, what can I say? Resistance is futile.
But the other side of that coin is we have the assertion from Gwyn that resistance is not futile.
That's
which
right.
which counters this common claim by the Borg. And I think that the message there relates to social activism today.
Okay.
Sometimes, wherever you stand on a social issue, sometimes the other side seems to be just overwhelmingly powerful. Years ago, decades ago, you had racial segregation. More recently, issues of voter suppression and gerrymandering, trying to game the system, not to mention LGBTQ rights. And just there are a lot of modern cultural wars. I know mainly about the United States, but our listeners in other countries, I'm sure, have similar culture wars there. Of course, Star Trek tends to come down on social issues on the liberal side. But the message here, deeper than that, is don't give up, don't surrender, keep at it. In the U.S., we just had an election in which a lot of these culture wars were part of people's voting choices. The Borg have always been about loss of individuality. But I think they're also a metaphor for the will of the majority being imposed on a minority. And when that happens, not just the Borg, you know, everywhere that happens, often there's some pretty shaky ethical justification for it.
Yeah, and it's creepy. The Borg also tells Zero that he can't hurt them, which is something he's very concerned about. He doesn't want to hurt anyone. And they also tell him that they will acknowledge his uniqueness. Right. Maybe this gives us some insight into how people are recruited into cults and the like. Right, Michael?
Yeah. You wonder about the Borg. In theory, every individual assimilated into the Borg plays a part. And we mentioned Ramda earlier. She was freaked out about the admonition and injecting that into the Borg collective, or at least the submatrix, really messed them up. You know, so in a way, if Zero was assimilated, Zero would be a part, maybe a small part of the overall collective, but one drop in a bucket doesn't make a lot of change. The message about Starfleet values and ethics in the next episode, All the World's a Stage, also seems to me to be aimed at today's culture, Rodney. You don't have to be Starfleet to do things the Starfleet way.
That's right. You don't even have to have a starship, right?
Right. Just believe and you can be Starfleet. Now, in this episode, this was said about actually flying the ship, but also our Protostar crew helping other people the way Starfleet would, even though they're not Starfleet and the people on the planet are not Starfleet, but they're behaving like they should in Starfleet. Mm-hmm. And I think we can also extend this idea to today's society. Applying Starfleet values even though, I mean, yes, we have to confess, we're real people. Star Trek is a TV show.
Yeah.
But it's something we can all do. And I would suggest that applying Starfleet values to our daily lives is something we should do. This episode is not just about introducing young people in the audience to Starfleet as a story element. It's about introducing them to a way of behaving all the time.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, like working together with others and being accepting and respectful of diversity. These are valuable lessons even today.
Mm-hmm. I also think that hope is a developing theme in Prodigy. The hope about joining Starfleet that causes the Protostar cadets to want to help others. The hope that the Enterprisians have for Starfleet returning. Garavik's own hopes for the future. Hope was pretty explicitly stated in All the World's a Stage, but I think we see it alluded to in other episodes too. Going to the Borg ship in hopes of finding a way to neutralize the weapon, even though you have to admit it was kind of a long shot.
Yeah.
And even Gwyn walking out among the Borg drones. I mean, that takes nerve and it takes resolve, but it also is indicative of hope. Hope that we can get through this. So I think hope is a theme that we should be watching as we look at the upcoming episodes. Rodney, we like to talk about the meaning of episode titles. And I think largely these three titles are fairly straightforward. Asylum, Let Sleeping Borg Lie, and All the World's a Stage. Asylum, of course, is what the Protostar cadets were looking for in reaching the communications outpost. And it really kind of was an end goal for them. I don't think they were looking much beyond that. We're going to go to Starfleet. We're going to get there and then we'll be okay. They were kind of expecting the adults to take over when they got there. You know, I don't think they were expecting necessarily to keep the ship. They didn't have too many expectations, just that this is the place we got to go. They'll take care of us.
And accept us.
Indeed. Let Sleeping Borg Lie. Well, that's based on the truism, let sleeping dogs lie, which means don't stir up trouble, leave well enough alone. Trying to deal with whatever the thing is could cause more trouble than it's worth. Of course, the Borg were sleeping. They were in the regeneration mode due to the pathogen. But our heroes did not leave well enough alone, you have to say.
And maybe they should have, but they did manage to get some intel on the living construct, though.
We'll see if it's enough to help them. All the World's a Stage, of course, is Shakespeare from As You Like It, in which a character says, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts. Shakespeare always used man, not one person, of course. Mm-hmm. The Enterprisians, at first, they seem to be cosplaying, and that's kind of an allusion to Star Trek conventions and things. And often at Star Trek conventions, the costumes aren't too great, and they're kind of playing the part imperfectly, which is what the Enterprisians were doing. But we eventually find out they take it seriously, and they live up to their aspirations.
You know, and it occurs to me here, of course, for the Enterprisians, the logs are these mini plays that they put on, right? And that is a kind of stage, but I suppose, you know, the planet on which they live is their stage be Starfleet.
You know, cultures that are not technological tend to pass information by storytelling, by oral history.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's not just one person telling the stories. They are portraying them based on a script, based on a storyline. But it probably is an effective way to tell the story. And obviously, the audience knew it very well. They loved it, and they knew what was coming up, and they were ready to cheer or smile or whatever. So it was a very familiar story, and that's one of the ways that you teach, particularly children. You tell them something again and again. You explain it. Not just once isn't enough, but you do it in a way that they will internalize it and make connections in their minds. And this repeat viewing of this play, this dramatization, with a lot of audience participation, was probably a good way to do that.
Well, why don't we turn to final thoughts here? Let's try to sum this up and maybe even look ahead.
Rodney, I still don't understand why these three episodes are part two of season one as opposed to season two. Most other Star Trek series these days are around 10 or a few more episodes. It must be something to do with future syndication contracts or some other business rationale. One season of 20 episodes, there may be some reason in this animated children's programming context that is better than two seasons of 10 episodes each. I don't know. Of course, now that we do know that there will be more Prodigy after these 20, we know that a season two has been authorized. So I don't understand that. As I said earlier, though, these three episodes we're talking about today are about the Prodigy crew discovering that they can't just hand things over to adults. They can't just go to Starfleet and everything will be fine. They have to take responsibility and do the right thing. And I think that they've accepted this in their lives. At the end of episode 13, Dahl even says they might have to leave the Protostar behind because of the weapon, but they can still be faithful to the idea of Starfleet. So we were expecting to know by now whether Prodigy will go on hiatus over the holidays or continue through the holiday season. As best as we can tell, I mean, there's been no announcement of a hiatus. So as best as we can tell, there will be no break, meaning that we'll have weekly episodes through New Year's Eve. Now, we expect to continue to podcast about this Prodigy season in batches. So our next podcast, we're planning it for Sunday, December 4th. We will keep people posted via Twitter, unless Elon Musk drives it into bankruptcy and Twitter disappears. If that happens, you can still always check our website at anchor.fm/Star Trek Academy. And if that were to happen, we'll have to figure out an alternative communications channel.
Yeah.
Right now, we're really just focused on the holidays coming up and on scheduling our next podcast. So Sunday, December 4th will be our next one.
All right. Well, with that, we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you in 3 weeks to talk about episodes 14, 15, and 16 right here on the Star Trek Academy podcast.